Hello, friends. This is Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting on a beautiful sunny day, cold day, here from live from the studios of KKNW here on 1150 AM in Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle in the United States. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place, and I know that with everyone's help, we can and will make this earth a much better place. I want to thank everyone for their wonderful support and for making Out of This World Radio one of the most popular talk shows in the 3.1 million Seattle and Puget Sound area, and the fastest-growing metaphysical and spiritual radio program in the world with over 100,000 listeners in over 60 countries. I have to tell you, friends, that today's shows will be really out of this world, because during the first hour from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, I'll be interviewing a really interesting gentleman named Tony Rodriguez, who was in the Secret Space Program, a program that brought him to Mars, the Moon, and Ceres, a planetoid in the asteroid belt. And I guarantee his interview will be really out of this world. During the second hour, I'll be interviewing from my good friend Dr. Michael Sala from 3 to 4 p.m. In my opinion, he's one of the world's greatest UFO researchers of extraterrestrial life beyond this planet, and what he has to say is what will be truly fascinating and out of this world. By the way, if you'd like more information about Dr. Sala, his website is www.exopolitics.org. I appreciate everyone's support for this program, because Out of This World Radio is a nonprofit program supported entirely by donations. And for those who'd like to donate, please go to the donate button at the upper right-hand corner of the program webpage at www.outofthisworld1150.com. Also, too, I've started a spiritual mentoring program. I'd be happy to give people readings as well. If you're interested, just send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com, or you can call me here in the United States at 509-750-9793 or toll free at 1-888-879-8339, which is good in the United States and in Canada. And for everyone who donates at least $25 today, I'd be happy to give them a brief psychic reading. I want to thank everyone so much for their donations and support, especially Anita in Dublin, Ireland, Eli in Texas, Marco in Helsinki, Finland, Judith in California, Emma Louise and Jan Eric in Norway, Marie and Alan in Communal Island, Robert, Julie and Louise in Bellevue, Randy and Jessica in Mercer Island, Darren in Olympia, Washington, Corey in Kent, Robert in Bellevue, Tom Frazen and Sig Sigby in Norway, David Lowe in Singapore, Ron McGregor, and Rod Shastri in Toronto, Canada, and everyone around the world who's helped me raise consciousness and make this planet a better place. I'd also like to thank the many sponsors of the show, including Crystal at the Crystal Voyage Bookstore in Tacoma and the wonderful Orion Tech Computers of Bend, Oregon. We're also looking for sponsors and advertisers for the show, and any advertising on the program will have a worldwide audience of over 100,000 listeners in over 60 countries for your goods and services. And I know that with everyone's help, we can and will make this planet a much better and happier place. With that, I'd also like to thank my dear friend Carol, who's running my website, designing my website, and providing wonderful support. My friends Michiko Hayashi, as well as Hiro Emoto, Mrs. Emoto of the Emoto Peace Project and the wonderful Emoto office in Tokyo, Japan, and my friends in the Galactic Alliance who've been supporting my show and I'm told are listening today, and my angelic and earthly family, as well as my wonderful producer Eric and my station manager Eric Krema, without whose help and support this program would not be possible. Out of This World Television is also now broadcasting three times a week on Comcast Channel 22 here in the Puget Sound area on Tuesdays at 6 p.m., Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m., and Saturdays at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time here on the Puget Sound area in the Puget Sound area on Comcast Channel 22. The schedule in January will be changing slightly. They'll still be in the same days, but I'll be announcing that in the next week or two as soon as we do change our schedules. The programs are also available on YouTube or in Vimeo under either my name, Ted Marr, or Out of This World Television. Finally, I want to thank everyone who came to my Galactic Wisdom Conference in June of 2016, a couple months ago. It was an incredible experience and a big success, and we'll be having another conference on March 10, 11, and 12 at the same location in Olympia, Washington, 2017. And following the conference on March 14th and 15th, I'll be bringing in the world's most famous Hado therapist from Tokyo, Japan, a Dr. Yoshi, who will be selling Hado machines and also giving demonstrations of the machine and how they work. I'm having an early bird special for the March 2017 conference. For those who register before the end of this year, they'll receive $25 off the regular admission price of $197. And for information, please go to our website at www.galacticwisdomconference.com or send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. Scott Lemriel will be there, as well as Michiko Hayashi and Dr. Yoshi, of course, the Hado therapist from Tokyo. We'll be also inviting Professor Jerry Pollack and Canadian Defense Minister Paul Hillier to come. And I think it'll be one conference that you won't want to miss. It'd be really interesting. I'm also sponsoring a free event at the Washington RV and Events Center at 9101 Stillicum Road in Olympia, called the Cosmic Awareness Fair on Saturday, June 21st, next month, 2017. There will be about 20 to 25 vendors there, and admission will be free. And at 1 p.m. that day, I'll be giving a presentation on the wonderful work, on the wonderful Emoto Peace Project. So I hope you can all come. For those of you in Europe, I'll be in visiting Damanur, the Echo Spiritual Community outside of Turin, Italy, in mid-January 2017 as their guest. It's an incredibly interesting place where they actually have plants hooked up to various musical instruments, and the instruments talk to people, and they also play in a symphony. It's definitely a different place. The community is run by very spiritually minded people who consult psychics every month to determine the best path for community decisions. And if you're in Italy, France, Germany, in Switzerland, in that area, you're welcome to stop by. It'd be fun to meet you. My email address, if you'd like to visit, is outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. With that, I'd like to bring on my first guest, Tony Rodriguez, who was with the Secret Space Program for 20 years. And he has so much to say. It's an incredible story. And Tony, hi, welcome to Out of This World Radio.
Hey, Ted. Thanks for having me.
Good.
Hello, everybody.
Oh, good. Good. So happy to have you on today. I want to ask my producer, Eric, is his sound level okay? It's good. Okay, great. Well, Tony, there's so many things we could go on, but I'll try to keep my questions short here. How did you get into the Secret Space Program, and what happened to you, Tony?
Okay, well, I wasn't in on a official capacity, whereas I wasn't the typical person that went in. Mm-hmm. And I believe the program I was in was a smaller offshoot of other programs that were running. In other words, they developed the technology, and certain people were in charge of it, and a few people had it for their own private use. And basically, I was a victim of it. I wasn't I wasn't what they were looking for. I was just somebody at the time. What happened was, I went to school in Southern Michigan, and I was in the TAG program at the time, and it was fourth grade. I was tested, and I was one of the top 5% in the school. And mm-hmm. So it's talented and gifted is what the acronym stands for, the TAG program. Mm-hmm. And one of the children in there came to our school that year, and he was very bright. He was by far the smartest of us, and we didn't really get along. And one day, you know, this was fourth grade. I was a 9-year-old boy. And he says one day, my dad's an Illuminati. What's your dad do? And I didn't have any idea what that was. But him and I just, you know, as boys do, we kind of were trying to see who was the alpha, you know, between us. So
sure.
I was, I don't want to say mean to him, but I was, you know, degraded. I embarrassed him a couple times. And so mm-hmm. he took note of that. We were never friends again.
Mm-hmm.
But later for our science fair for that school, his dad came in and was a judge. And when I walked by them in the cafeteria, we were setting up our science exhibits. He said, "Dad, that's the boy that ruined my confidence." And they had a weird conversation. You know, his dad said, "We can do some," I forget what they said exactly, but he said, "Well, he doesn't really deserve that." And I just walked away. I didn't really understand. And then it wasn't a couple days later, I went through the standard alien abduction scenario.
Okay.
And I was taken, and I was put through what is called the 20 and back.
Tony,
I was taken, and...
Tony, not to interrupt my friend, but you were abducted. Who were they, Grays, who abducted you? Did you see them? Who abducted
yes.
you?
Yes. In the okay. middle of the night, basically, I woke up. There was some of the... We had the old ringer phone on the wall. It would start ringing.
Yeah.
And you could hear something going on outside. There were lights, bright lights out the window. And mm-hmm. You could hear, like, crackling noises. And then the phone would ring, and nobody would get it. Mm-hmm. And we all stayed in bed for some, which I thought was weird. It rang and rang. And I went back to sleep. Then the lights went out, and I woke up, and I had a gray standing face-to-face with me. You know, I was laying in bed. He was staying, you know, over me, standing over me in the bed. Wow. And as soon as I moved, they did something, and I was frozen. And then some shorter reptilians came in from the end of my bed and picked me up and carried me out. And I think we were portaled out. I don't remember. I remember a bright flash of light over by the window of my bedroom, and I lost consciousness, and I woke up in a laboratory.
My goodness. Well, please continue. Yeah.
Basically, from that time on, I experienced 20 years. I went through some medical procedures, and I eventually woke up and had no memory of my family or where I came from. And I was a person, I was kept as a slave. I was used as a piece of equipment. And I was traded for personal use and went from program to program after, you know, they would keep me for a certain, they would train me for a certain thing. Mm-hmm. And once I was no good for it anymore or not as good for it, they would send me to a different program. I was leased. I think I was traded like a piece of equipment or a piece of property. And I went through several programs. I went through the MK Ultra kind of mind control programming where they basically tortured us as kids. And I was not alone in there. There were other kids, maybe half a dozen to a dozen kids. And it wasn't a dozen. There was probably eight or nine kids that went through the same thing. And when we got done testing from that, we ended up in a program where they would drug us and put us out and use us for psychic service, for psychic, you know, I was unconscious. But when I woke up, people were amazed by the things that they said that I said. So I don't know how that worked exactly, but I lost that ability around puberty. And then I was taken and I was owned privately by a Satanist billionaire. And we were used for, I was a sex slave for a couple years between the age of probably 13 and 16.
I'm so sorry to hear
and,
that.
And yeah, it was a traumatic thing to recall. I didn't, I didn't know that I had some of the problems, some of the emotional problems that was left over from them. When they put me back, I had forgot everything. They erased me, you know, they blank slated me. And I still had emotional issues with that.
Right.
So, I mean, I didn't know until I remembered everything why I had trouble dealing with it. So recalling it has been a great amount of therapy for me. But after that service there, I was taken and then I went and did space service. I was in space for about 12 years. I was taken to the moon and trained as a support unit for soldiers. And I went to Mars on a program. And we had a few combat missions, and that failed. That program failed. Mm-hmm. And so I was retested and retrained, and I ended up working, eventually working cargo on a merchant ship, well, cargo ship, for the Ceres colony, and which is a base, a breakaway civilization of Germans that live inside the planetoid Ceres. There's a huge colony there. There's probably just under 250,000 people when I left living there. And eventually, after the 20 years was up, they put me back. They used this technology that's well covered by many people, Randy Kramer and Corey Good. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people have questions of how that works, but the 20 and back technology is, there's a lot of information out there through those guys. And I was returned to my 9-year-old self, and I woke up the next day in my bed and went up and went to school as a 9-year-old boy. But I was different. I was changed from it. You know, it was a traumatic experience those years.
Right.
And, you know, I had a life out there. I had developed a life. I had friends. I had people, you know. And, you know, I had adapted to it. So it was an experience that changed me. The next day I woke up, I was no longer the same person,
wow,
even though I was still 9 years old.
I want to share something with you that I learned from Alex Collier. I don't know if you know about him, Tony, but he's a Andromeda contactee. And
I think I've seen some of his links. Yeah,
an interesting man. And in one of his lectures, I believe it was 1995 in Texas. I've got a copy of it. He stated, as far as time travel goes, that he stated that the Greys and the Reptilians first entered into our timeline in 1931 through their contact with Nazi scientists in Germany. And previous to that, they had not been on our timeline at all. But once they were invited in by the Nazis, once they came into our timeline in 1931, now this gets into kind of science fiction, but it's very interesting what he said. He said that once the reptilians had come into our timeline in 1931, they were able to time travel. They went all the way back to just after the collapse of Atlantis to about 9000 BC. And they have altered our timeline since that time. So you see different, he said that you see historical examples of UFO in our history, and they have fiddled with our timeline to change our history. And that was a very interesting comment, because I thought of that now that you've talked about, they had you forced to work for them in this space program for 20 years. And then incredibly, Tony, they bring you back to when you were 9 years old and try to wipe your memory clean. Of course, you have remembered things as if nothing had happened. And it's very interesting. But I remember that comment by Mr. Collier. It's a very interesting comment he made.
Yeah, that's very true. That's exactly. They went through great effort. And, you know, I was aware on the other side that they had to put me back. And toward the end of the process, they had ways of punishing you. You know, when I was working mm-hmm. for the Germans, if you were disobeyed or did something wrong, they had ways of punishing you. So you behaved. And towards the last day when I was going back, they had nothing else to do because we had to go back. They have their own set of laws out there. And I was combative throughout the entire process. I don't know if that contributed to me remembering or what. The fact that I got my memories back or this amount of them is up for debate with a lot of people on the Internet. There's been people that say that I had them. These are false memories that are put in and like a mind control thing, like for whatever reason.
Right.
Or that, I'm making it all up or whatever. But I have a lot of memories. And the thing that's different with me and other people that may have been through this is the 6 years or so or 8 years that I spent on Earth. Mm-hmm. I've been able to go back and find some of the places that I lived. And I actually traveled to the house that I was at during that time for that billionaire. I've been there.
Wow.
And it was exactly like I know the roads around there,
wow.
which was surreal to me. Mm-hmm. I took a trip and, I had mapped a route to the house to go and visit. The day before I was in a hotel and I'm just looking on the maps how I'm going to get there. And I mapped what looked like the quicker route on the map. But when I got halfway there, I thought, nope, this is the way. And I took a right. And it turned out that the way I had originally mapped was a out of the way, like it turned into a one-way road where I would have had to detour. And the way that I turned from memory, from a repressed memory from living there, was actually the quickest way and took me straight there.
Oh, wow.
So that was, many times I've had to prove this all to myself. It's hard to suddenly remember all this stuff and believe yourself, And there's a lot of people out there that, are staunch against it. There's no way that could have happened. That's ridiculous. So, I always ask myself, these are the kind of things you just kind of ask, did this really happen? Am I really, is this really real?
Right.
And unfortunately, I've been able to prove it to myself time and time again. My earthbound memories line up. My wife, who never believed in any aliens or anything, she's a mm-hmm. Christian woman, and mm-hmm. that's it. There was no life outside,
Right.
She doesn't believe in aliens, or at least she didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go to her and challenge her, say, ask me some questions, please help me out with this, And she sat down, and after all the evidence that I put, I've showed her things on the computer and on maps, and, now she believes me. She's buying me 100% because there's just so much,
Yeah.
One or two details that I say might be sketchy,
yeah.
be, vague, but there's just so many. There's just such a volume of all those memories of the time on Earth and details of series that I've called out before they've been made public.
In my Facebook page, a post that I did for you, and you can find that under Out of This World Radio under my name, Ted Mahr, M-A-H-R, on Facebook. You'll see a map of the solar system, and Ceres is identified for those of you out there who are interested. The second thing I just want to share with you, Tony, is that the other thing that Alex Collier said is that the negative entities, the reptilians, do time travel. And under one timeline, 300 years from now, we kick the negative entities out of this universe. And so Alex Collier theorized that they had, since they time traveled, they have come back to this time to alter our timeline so we don't kick them out. I think that there's other things going on now, but it was very interesting. I wanted to share that with you. I wanted to ask you a little bit about Tony, and thank you. You know what? I'm so glad that you're alive today to tell this, to tell your story, because I think what you're saying is genuine. You certainly sound sincere, and I have no doubt that you're telling the truth.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to... Go ahead. I was just going to ask you about this asteroid belt planetoid called Ceres. That's actually so people can reference it out there. That's in the asteroid belt between Mars and the next planet over. Would that be Jupiter, I guess, out in the solar system?
I believe Jupiter.
Okay.
It's a base there. And the only reason that most of the service that I did, you're talking about a term of years. I worked on two ships that I remember.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time I wasn't allowed to know where we were. They would tell us where we were, but there was no I wasn't really educated to where it mattered. You know, if I, you know, took somebody that had no knowledge of the world on a boat,
right,
and I said, now we're by off the coast of Morocco, and they had no idea where that was, it wouldn't matter what they were told.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of the situation I was in as we
mm-hmm.
traveled. We went throughout the galaxy mm-hmm. and traded with alien races. We were trying to trade goods for tech was our primary mission.
Interesting.
And we traveled time. We got back. Sometimes we got back a minute or two before we left. And so I would get up in the morning. There was a buzzer that went off. There were about 40,000 other slaves there that I knew about.
40,000?
And a lot of guys were working in mines on Ceres. A buzzer would go off. The lights would come on. It was like a prison. There were no bars. Like, there were no doors. There was just a main door that had guards by it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd go to work, and I'd go on a ship, and we'd fly out to space, and we'd go 8 to 10 hours, and we'd come back, and I'd still have the entire day. And I would go, and toward the end of my service, towards the last couple of years, I had freedom to go roam around the base.
Mm-hmm.
And, several bases. There's several series. The Ceres colony is a network of underground bases connected by train throughout the entire planetoid.
Wow.
So I was able to travel. I didn't see them all. You know, I didn't go everywhere. But I had a girlfriend, and I would go see her.
Mm-hmm. Was she human?
She was a human. She was a slave like I was. She was she was a sex slave doing sex service there.
Oh, man.
The place was, there was a red light district. I know some of this is hard to swallow, but
this
is the truth. There was a red light district there.
Wow.
There were residential districts. There were industrial areas. But I would go, I would ride the train to see her, and it wasn't a normal, ideal relationship. You know, we were both literally slaves. I had just earned a small amount of freedom, you know, after years of service. The Germans, I call them the Germans, call them the Fourth Reich or whatever you want to do it, the breakaway civilization, they were very efficient at motivating you to work. In other words, everything we did was recorded and pitted against a counterpart on the ship. So if you worked on one side of the ship as a cargo guy, there was another guy that did the exact same job on the other side of the ship. And they would tell you both, you know, if whoever does more work out of you, the end of the week will get, you know, a trip into town or, you know, money or a day off thing. They gave you rewards. It was very real.
They used
money?
That's
the only reason I know about Ceres, because one of those months I was the most productive, and they let me go to the bridge.
Wow.
They gave me a... orders to bring a report on the cargo weight, or, you know, what we had in the cargo,
mm-hmm.
which was totally just made up. They didn't need me to bring them a report. They knew everything from the computer.
Wow.
I went to the bridge, and I got to watch us land. I got to watch us pull up to the base. There are giant doors inside the crater next to the cryovolcano, the Alhana Mons. Inside that crater, right next to it, there were a set of giant doors down in one of the craters. Mm-hmm. There were several different craters on the inside of that crater, and there was a giant set of doors that opened up and let us in, and that was the hangar area.
My goodness.
And so I got to see that and then return to my station.
Uh-huh.
And there weren't many times that I got to look out the window.
Right, right. How big is Ceres compared to the planet Earth?
You know, I did an interview. It's about 580 miles in diameter, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The train network, I remember that if you didn't have to wait in line, because you had to connect, and sometimes there were lines to catch the next train, but I remember you could make it pretty much anywhere in about 45 minutes.
Wow. You said that they use money. What kind of money do they, is it paper money, coin money, or is
they use money. Well, they had a few different kinds. You know, we had ETs on the base. We had a couple races of humans that were taller than us. And one of them was like a really tall humanoid race, and they had really, you know, wide, big hips. They were tall. They were 8-9 feet tall. And they ran all the shops there. Literally all the shops you went to were managed by one of those people, one of those humanoids. Hmm. And there was another race, and there was another race there that was pretty tall, 7-8 feet tall. And they had kind of a longer skull, elongated skull, longer forehead that went back. And a lot of them had long hair. And other ETs would come and go. It was a trade. It was a trade outpost. They were ETs could come there, and there was a window they could go and put up whatever goods they have and get some money out of it. And that's where I got paid. I had a check. It was some small, like $20 a week or something.
Did they use the U.S. dollar?
I went to the window. And what's that?
Do they use the U.S. dollar up there, or is it another?
No. It was a series dollar. It was.
I see.
They called it a franc. You know, interestingly enough, uh-huh. It was called a franc, and it had German scenes on the money. Mm. They were big. They had the German the mining sword was on a lot of the money. I don't know what I remember that has some significance in their culture, the mining sword. I really don't know why, but that mm-hmm. was on some of the money.
I see.
And they would have, like, I remember one of the bills had a horse battle. Like an old, from the 1800s, like a horses and cannons, like a battle scene mm-hmm. on the back of the money. Mm. That was ETs would stand in line with us there. I remember that, and it was a bank, basically like a bank window at the end of the hangar, and we could go into town. It was everything was based on money there.
What was the name of the bank? Was it? Do they have branches here on planet Earth?
No. There was no name. There wasn't. It was just the trade window.
I see.
You know, and it was in German. Whatever trade window translates to in German is what it said.
I see.
Above it, but it was just a trade window. It wasn't a like that.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
I think it was more like a local government service, the trading. You know, where you could trade in goods for money right there.
Wow. Well, there's a lot of ways we could go now. One thing I noticed, I read this from Dr. Salo's interview with you, Tony, just fascinating that that your spacecraft was called the Max von Laude. Is that what the name of it was?
Our first one, I've struggled. I really tried to get a memory of the first one I was on, which was an older, more like a submarine, a smaller ship.
Uh-huh.
And it had automated systems. Like, I never had a boss come and tell me what to do. There was a screen with a printout that told us what to do, and it would buzz. There would be a buzzer, bam, and when something broke, and we would run to it and see what the screen told us to do, and it gave us step by step instructions on how to fix whatever was wrong. And we were maintenance guys. Wow. And I did that for a few years, and that ship eventually broke down. And when we got the new one, which was a much bigger, more modern, just beautiful on the inside for the. I guess for the top part of the ship, the bottom part of the ship looked more like a factory.
Mm-hmm.
They tossed around for a minute. There was a vote. I wasn't involved on the vote, but there was a vote between the bridge officers on what they'd named it, and they named it the Max von Laue. And it was, again, it was a German acronym for Ceres Colony Corporation. I forget how it was, like CGV or whatever those words are in German. I don't speak German. But it was an acronym for that spaceship, Max von Laue was the name of it. And it was a big thing. It was mostly a cargo. Well, I worked in the cargo area, and I was deliberately kept in the dark as to other systems that were on the ship. They would have meetings in German and speak German, and when they wanted to speak to me, they could turn on a translator device. I don't know if it was an input. I don't know how it worked,
mm-hmm.
but they could turn it on and off where I could understand them. And
yeah.
They would turn it on and say, well, how much, what's our free space and cargo this morning? And I would read off my report. I had that data from my station that I would give them. And then they would go back. So there were other parts of the ship. There was a whole middle section of the ship. I had no idea. I'd never been there, and I had no idea what went on there.
Wow.
And I toward the end, I did progress report. I did mission briefings and progress reports in the front of the ship. So in the morning, I would go into the front with the officers, and it was a wider hall, carpet, plush, looked like a nice aircraft. You know, the walls were
right.
Like a fabric over a plastic, you know, mm-hmm. it was nice looking. And then when you went back, I would walk straight back towards the end of the ship and take a ladder down to my deck, which was the second to the bottom one.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like more industrial, more of a open pipes and steel grating floor kind of look to it. And everything was like a white, an off-white epoxy paint job on everything.
I wanted to.
I've just been contacted with a guy that's a graphic artist, and I may be able to generate some artwork. So I might be having some of that come out in the future. I haven't.
Wonderful.
After I did the interviews with Dr. Stella, I haven't really pursued. Going public, making a website, and chasing down too many more interviews. I want what happened to me to not go with me to the grave. And I know that in the future, when disclosure happens, I'm going to be a point of reference for some historian to look back on.
Right.
And that's really the reason I've gone public with what I know,
right,
is just to add it into the historical record for somebody to have another data point in the future, because it's obvious that it'll be necessary.
Well, I want to let you know that, my friends, I'm in touch with the Galactic Alliance, and they've completely protected you, so I don't want you to worry about anything. You're speaking the truth today, and I appreciate you being on the program so much, Tony. One of the things... My pleasure. Yeah, I'm so glad you're here. One of the things that Dr. Sala wrote about, I wanted to ask you about it. He writes, one of your missions was one involving a nuclear attack on a Mayan colony located in the Pleiades star system. Could you talk a little bit about that, if you can?
Absolutely. That was the I was demoted after that. I had disobeyed an order, and I was demoted and lost my position, and I lost the ability to travel through the colony, and I lost my paycheck after that mission because so many of us felt strongly against it. Trading goods for tech was our primary mission, and it was a very rare thing for us to get a new technology. It wasn't every day. And especially to a breakaway race from Earth,
right,
which was very important. They didn't want to deal with us at all. And so we made contact. I don't know how they did it. There's a, I think there's a base around Jupiter where everybody, where they would do that. They would set up where we would go. We were expected. Whenever we went somewhere, they were expecting us. We didn't just cold call other solar systems and pull in there.
Mm-hmm.
So for whatever reason, we were contacted and we went to a planet. And because I remember that day because I didn't do anything. I didn't have anything to do. I just stood at my station because we parked and they went in to do a negotiation. There was a negotiation crew, part of the crew that would go in and negotiate. And there was an officer that did that. He was a very abrasive person.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently the Mayans apparently they knew about us as soon as we got near the planet, and they knew, they said nobody could come aboard, and they told us who from the crew could come aboard, and they picked three or four girls from the bridge crew that had no experience in negotiating, the captain himself and a few others that were not the typical negotiation party.
Mm-hmm.
So they went in and they were gone, and that was our entire day. And when we left, they announced that we had made a deal to trade for some very high tech things for goods, because they needed some goods. They had an outbreak of something, either for them or among their animals. I don't know exactly what it was, but they needed like a pharmaceutical, or like a raw material to make a pharmaceutical, something like that.
Wow.
And so we traded everything with them. For about a period of 6 weeks, we were at capacity. I'd come in the morning, and my station would have boxes around it.
Wow.
We were just loaded with stuff, and we took them three or four loads like that a day.
Wow.
for a period of six weeks.
Yeah.
And towards the end, they broke the deal off with us, and mm-hmm. Said they weren't going to pay us, and that they said that we did something wrong and broke the deal off. And we had to go and consult with, there's a base around Jupiter, and we had to consult with a reptilian organization, and we were taken on, and they brought me on there, and one of the into the station with them that morning. And then one of the officers said, why you're here, because they like to kill us sometimes to get their point across, and you're one of the guys we brought along to die. That was why they brought me and another couple of slaves like myself. I had no business leaving the ship. We went in, and when we got to the door, and there was tall hallways with the windows were up up off the ground so that we couldn't see out the window, but like something that was 10 or 12 feet tall could see out the window. That was the, what the hallway was like on the space station. And we went in, and they only took the top three officers when we got there at the door. And the captain, came when he came out, was just completely, you know, like having a nervous breakdown. He was completely just not, he was out of it, man. He was bawling, crying. He was just couldn't talk. He was shaking. They were carrying him. And we left. And they said, get out of here as fast as we could. And we hustled. We double-timed. We didn't run, but we walked as fast as we could back to the ship. And we had 3 or 4 days off. And then we went and picked up at Diego Garcia a load of radioactive. It was a myth. They were missiles. They were missile cassettes, two of them. And we had the guys in the cargo bay were given radioactive protocols, what to do if you were radioactive, if you had radiation poisoning or whatever. And we went, everybody kind of figured out what was going on. And during the mission briefings, everybody told me in my department that if we were going to fire missiles at the an advanced Mayan civilization that was a human breakaway, there's a law against doing that, apparently, out there. There was a law against attacking humans from Earth. And they said that they weren't going to do it. Everybody in my apartment said, no, I'm not going to follow any orders. We're all going to strike if that's the case.
Well,
and I made that known. And later that day, we flew back there, and we did. And I had refused to work to do what I was told. And we had shock. We had correction collars, like a shock collar that would electrocute you, give you an electrical shock.
Oh my God!
And I was shocked. They turned that on, and you know, the MK mind control programming was as such to where if you got electrically shocked, you would just comply with whatever you were told to do.
There
was
a,
very effective.
There was an old Star Trek series which had that, where Captain James Kirk had a collar around him which forced him to comply. But go ahead. Yes.
I think I remember that.
Yeah, you remember
know, at
that?
First, when I first got my memories back, I didn't really remember the collar.
Wow.
I had only remembered being shocked. And then, more memory surfaced. I remember people talking about it on me.
Well, this is bringing up a lot of questions quickly, Tony. So there's this breakaway colony of Mayans in the Pleiades star system. The Pleiadians, of course, are advanced humans. And was the colony destroyed?
I have no idea.
Okay.
The day I was walked out, when they returned me back, remember when I said I was combative during that process, my last day there?
Right.
Usually it was usually everybody would come and see you off, but because I was demoted and I had disobeyed an order, I didn't get any of that. I had one officer that I hadn't seen since then came and walked me to the shuttle that took me back to the moon. And he said, you know, he said, we had a good 10 minutes. Walk together, and he said that I had no idea what we were doing or where we were, and if anybody got hurt at all. As far as I know, he said, as far as you know, we shot those into space. You had no business to disobey anything. You didn't have any, you know, you were unaware of what was going on. You had no business to make a decision on your own. You should be ashamed of yourself, you know, basically. Mm-hmm. And he's right. You know, I didn't know. I was going by an educated guess of what was going on.
Right.
And so when you ask me what happened, I honestly, I don't know. Nobody gave me details after that.
Right. Well. Well.
But it was pretty obvious that, you know, we had lost a lot of money. There were other, there's a lot of details I've put out in other interviews and written accounts that I've left out just for time right now. But there was a lot of other small things that led me to believe that that's exactly what we were doing and what we did.
Now,
so I don't know what became of that.
I wanted
and that entire incident was only about maybe 6 months, 3 months before I was sent back,
wow,
before the end of my 20 years. That was at the very end.
Wow. There, you've opened up an entirely new universe for me. And what you're saying is so incredible, Tony. And I'm so grateful to have you on today. I had Corey Good on my show last year a couple of times, and in his recent writings, he said the entire solar system has been quarantined by an advanced race called the Blue Avians, which are sixth to ninth dimensional beings, and they've sealed in both the good guys and the bad guys, and in an attempt to transform not only Earth, but also the bad guys into benevolent kind creatures, or at least give them a choice that they don't have to continue their negative ways. And it's part of an ascension process, actually, for planet Earth, which is slated for ascension. And there's been so many people writing about that. So I want to mention that because I know from what I've been told that these negative things happening out there in the solar system beyond planet Earth, those days are numbered. And I think it's safe to say that this is just my opinion now, Tony, but I think it's safe to say that the breakaway human civilization out there beyond this planet will be also given the choice to become benevolent and kind and loving, and so that they'll stop their negative activities. But if they persist in pursuing, and if they don't change, then they'll be sent somewhere else. But our future, I think, is very, very bright, and I want everyone to remember that, because I'm not saying this in a negative way, but rather in a positive way, that the things that you're describing are important for people to know about, but also important. It's important to realize that the time that that these things continue out there, these negative activities by this breakaway civilization, are coming to an end, and soon.
Yeah, my personal feeling is that living like that is self-defeating. Whatever teaching, whatever religious teaching you believe in, I believe that, forcing people to be slaves eventually is self-defeating in the fact that that person can't develop and contribute how they normally would. Mm-hmm. What if Martin Luther King was a slave and never a doctor? And, right. Or anybody else, Mark Zuckerberg that made Facebook. I mean, what if he was a slave and not a college student where he could contribute? And on and on and on. So ultimately, slavery and the way that they're treating people and dealing with other races out there, from what I experienced, the group that I was with is mm-hmm. self-defeating in the long run. So mm-hmm. it's obvious that it's going to change. Right. Like I said, for me, I don't really have a dog in the fight. I don't have any kind of ongoing contact. I haven't had anything really weird happen to me since then, at least that I'm aware of.
Right.
And I'm just trying to add this in for history's sake. I'm not doing this for any money or anything. Right. And I'm not really pursuing most of the interviews that I get offered or to go out and hit some kind of circuit. I'm just trying to add this into the record. Like I said, someday, mm-hmm. post-disclosure, it's going to come in handy to somebody. I really feel that.
Well, I'm so grateful to have you on today. We've got about 12 minutes left, Tony, and I wanted to tell you that for those of you listening today, this is Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from KKNW on 1150 AM here in Seattle in the United States. I have a wonderful gentleman named Tony Rodriguez, who participated in 20 years of a secret space program out beyond this planet. One thing I have to ask you, Tony, I think I'm so grateful that you're still alive to tell these things to people, because I think it would have been, did you, for people that misbehaved, did they exterminate them? What did they do to them? Punish them with these collars? Or what did they do?
There were guys that got in trouble that disappeared on Ceres. There were, I did witness a few incidences of things, of people that mm-hmm. would get in fights and things, and mm-hmm. They wouldn't be there the next day. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if, they did threaten us with murder. They did say, if you screw up, you're going to be shot, Okay. So we took it seriously. We had been abused for most of the time. So everybody believed them when they told you they would shoot you.
Right.
It was a pretty strict existence, as far as that goes. Mm-hmm. For the most part, though, it wasn't overly abusive. It was you had to get up, you had to eat the same time every day, you had to shower the same time and do your thing, and then they put you back. Hmm. And we were treated like equipment, and as such, we were well-maintained, in that mm-hmm. regard.
Mm-hmm.
We just didn't have any freedom, sure. We were conditioned to not believe we deserved it. And so, yeah. Like I said, ultimately, for any society, that's a very self-defeating philosophy.
Right, right. What about medical treatment? Let's say you broke your leg or got a cold, or if you got a cold out there or got sick, what kind of medical treatment?
I was injured badly on a few different occasions, and I was taken. And, this is something that I wish I could have, you know, this was information to me during the time that didn't mean anything to me because I was in pain. So however they fixed it, I didn't care. I just wanted to be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, now after the fact is what where I'm at now. I wish I would have paid attention more. But I was, for the most part, I was, both times I was seriously injured, I was unconscious during the treatment, but I woke up the next day just fine. And once I had my an arm, I'd lost an arm and a foot, and on Mars, on the Mars colony. And when I got back, I just the next morning, I had my arm and my foot back.
Oh my goodness.
The technology was very advanced, the medical technology. And the girls, my girlfriend on Ceres, they were they changed hair color. They wasn't wigs; it was their real hair, and they changed hair color weekly, greatly. I mean, you know, and radical hair things that they had. So they had other forms of medical you know, procedures that were advanced as well. You know, their beauty techniques or whatever, that was advanced for what they were doing. And they were maintained, you know, they were taken care of well, too. So they made it to where, you know, on the ship, people did get sick and go to the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And they made it very, how do I say this, uncomfortable for any for a guy in my position to say, oh, I'm sick today. I don't want to go to work. If you did that, you know, the doctor would poke you with a bunch of needles that he didn't need to. And he'd make you run on the treadmill. We got to get your heart rate. Get on the treadmill. And they made it very uncomfortable to go to the doctor so that people didn't do it unless they were genuinely, you know, sick.
Right, right, right. One thing I wanted to mention, Corey, or Tony, is that once this information becomes public and there's disclosure, and I've been told it will eventually, can you imagine what fantastic medical technology could help the people of this planet Earth? There, people wouldn't get sick, period. And if you broke your... If you lost an arm or even a foot, they would simply replace it with a brand new one.
I think if people had hopes of living longer and healthier, it would change their entire life plans. I think people would, it would change everybody's behavior if they had hope of not getting sick. You know what I mean? Like if life in general for so many people that live in poverty or lower class today was so much more hopeful, I think it would change everything. People would have a more hopeful outlook and begin to behave, follow suit in their behavior as well. I think we'd see crime decline.
Yeah.
You know, why would you commit a crime when you're going to live a long, full life?
Right.
And I think the situation we're in now is that the people in these programs that have participated and turned a blind eye to rights violations, you know, to what they thought they had to do. Now they've told so many lies to cover it up that they really can't uncover it without, you know, damaging themselves, without being in a lot of trouble themselves.
Sure.
And I think that's the only situation we're in. That's the only reason we don't know about it, is because the behavior has been acceptably so bad inside the programs that they're afraid to let us know. And they're stunting their own growth, you know. Like I said, it's ultimately... Everything they've done to this point has been probably necessary from the beginning, but very self-defeating.
Right, right. Interesting. What I'd like to see eventually is kind of like when they ended apartheid in South Africa back in 1989 to 1991. And in South Africa, what they did is that they had a Reconciliation Truth Commission where people were expected to come forward and just tell the truth about the things that they did through apartheid to oppress the blacks there, but they weren't persecuted. That was left up to God in a way. And that's, I think, a kind of program that I think would be very good for healing on this planet as well, for the corporate executives, part of the interplanetary corporate conglomerate, which runs these private bases up on Mars, to the breakaway civilization on Ceres. That would be... That personally, I think that would make a lot of sense.
You know, after what I went through, you could easily classify everything that I went through as abusive.
Right.
And I don't have some kind of hard feelings where I want to sue them and get money or see people go to jail. I really don't. I feel that we've been lied to, and because our technology has been so covered up, the tech has been covered up from us and hidden from us. I don't feel the need for revenge. I feel that mankind needs to kind of get back on the road towards development again, you know, because we're just going in circles right here with our gasoline and everything. This is my personal opinion. You know?
Sure.
But I don't feel like if they came clean with us about it, that it would be that big of a deal versus what we would gain. You know, I don't feel like what we would lose by knowing the truth of widespread slavery and people that don't remember it. Because you can bet that if I went through and remembered it, that there are thousands, tens, maybe hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people like me that have been slaves out there that have no idea.
Right.
They have no idea.
I think there's going to be a lot more coming forward. I think that's my sense is in the future. And one thing too, you know, I'm speaking from a beautiful radio studio here in Bellevue overlooking Puget Sound, and I can see the mountains. It's really a pretty day. And this whole studio now is lit up in this beautiful white light. I know my angel friends are here. But I'm looking out, Tony, seeing all these cars on the freeway out there. And they don't use gasoline, do they? They don't use fossil fuels out there, do they, to ask a silly question?
On Sirius, they had six-wheeled vehicles. They had small kind of streets. But they had the train system, and then the security, the police, and the maintenance guys had six-wheeled electrical vehicles that they drove around. Mm-hmm. There were no cars. And no, there were no fossil. We had no need for oil.
Right. Well, I know that there's free energy out there and a lot of alternatives to fossil fuels. And I was thinking the other day, Tony, that, you know, it's been, 100 years, 110 years or so, 120 years since the automobile first appeared here on the planet. And we're still running it as if we're using this old antiquated technology, when I'm sure that there's better alternatives out there. And eventually I'm looking forward to the day when disclosure will be done, and we'll be able to have access to this wonderful new technology, or we won't be using fossil fuels.
Yeah, and like I said, that's the gains. You know, no matter how many terrible things we're going to have to face up to, and believe me, there are some terrible things that, as a species, we're going to have to face up to, some very terrible realities.
Right.
They're going to have to be swallowed.
Right.
Now, as bad as those are, they pale in comparison to the good things we're going to get.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
And I was asked once, and this is a hard question to talk about, but I was asked once by one of the researchers that I worked with in the beginning when I first recalled everything. They said, would you do it again? If you had the choice, would you go out there and go through everything you went through again? And we're talking about, you know, being raped, as you know, and used as a slave for a long time.
Wow.
And I said, yes. And the reason is because out there I knew is what's real. You know, there's life. There's intelligent life around every corner in space throughout the universe. The cosmos is a heavily populated place. There's a lot of knowledge. There's more out there. And that's reality. We down here are living the lie. We are cut off from where we are supposed to be. So I'm happy that I got to experience that, no matter how abusively, no matter how badly. I had a glimpse of what life is really like. And us right now being kept in the dark and being lied to the severe, gross extent that we are is the lie.
Well, I think the true nature of humanity on this planet, Tony, is to be loving, kind, benevolent, and caring for each other. And I think that's the future we're headed toward. I think our future is very, very bright. And we've got about a minute left, Tony. And I just want to thank you so much for coming on today. And I want to give you the rest of the time to say whatever you like to wrap up your wonderful interview today.
Ted, well, you know what? I'm just say to anybody listening to this, there's plenty of information. Please go out. Please check into the Corey Good, the SphereBeingAlliance.com. Please go to exopolitics.com and look at Dr. Stella's work, Bath. Both of those. Randy Kramer has contributed. There's myself. We've all been, obviously, when you say something this radical, that there is doubt, and there's people doubting it. But please go out and research all of it for yourself. There's a great deal of information that most people are just unaware of right now about the secret space programs. And I would just urge anybody to just go out there and learn that for yourself, and just know there's a huge, greater existence than what we have here on the Earth, even though it's wonderful here. There's so much more out there. And there's a lot of info. It's starting to come to life, resources for people to go to and learn. And I think everybody can grow from this. Thanks a lot, Ted, for having me. I'm looking forward to doing it again, possibly being on your other show.
Wonderful.
I'm here to help.
wonderful. Friends, I'll be interviewing Tony on my television show next month in January. And please stay tuned. We'll be interviewing Dr. Michael Sala from Hawaii in just a few minutes. I consider him one of the world's foremost UFO researchers on life beyond this planet. And Tony, thank you so much for coming on today.
You're very welcome, Ted. Merry Christmas and happy holidays to everybody out there listening. I hope you guys all have a great season and a great 2017.
Thank you so much, Tony. Please stay tuned, friends, for our next hour.